Welcome to part two of Aliens at Comedy Potpourri. I'm Paul.
And I'm Alan.
And this is going to be talking more about some abductions and different agencies. And
oh my God, we're going down the rabbit hole on this one. Just like any other people that report talking about abductions, men in black, secret conspiracies, and other. Grab yourself a can of beer and get ready to sit back and listen.
And here we go. So we talked about all the different places. First, we'll talk about the agencies. The first one was, oh my God, I was trying to think of what they were. There were signs.
Well, remember now that as the setup goes, just after 1947 with the Roswell account and stuff like that, and all this stuff being removed to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base for into that place that you called the Blue Room that we were talking about briefly, or what would become the Blue Room, right? Because, I mean, we're right. Just starting at the very beginning
building,
of this.
Building 18, Blue Room.
Hangar 18?
They said building, but it's probably Hangar 18.
I guess it would be
if
hangar.
It's an Air Force, it's, yeah. It's Hangar
18. It's got a giant elevator. Elevator.
Nothing good comes from going down in an elevator. I'm just saying.
In a military base.
Yeah, that's not just... How many sub-levels does this go? Boy, it keeps going.
Keeps going.
Yeah, right? So, you have the event of 1947 with Roswell. You have another additional crash that takes place not too far from the same area. We talked about that. We talked about the setup for Project Sign, Project Twinkle, Project Grudge. The stuff that would eventually morph into Project Blue Book, which is the most well-known documented one, because I think that was going for about 10 years, I believe.
There's a kind of what they did is just report it to the Air Force, and they'd look at it, and they had it like a... they'd send people out to look at it.
They didn't have an official documented setup, but the stuff that was set up early on by a couple of the generals, General Don Kehoe, I believe, I think is his name, actually had it set up where they actually had a document form that the guys in Blue Book would use to send out. They kept that form going, even though Blue Book was already closed.
Right.
Down.
And then also MUFON as a public took over, but once Blue Book was gone, they actually started up.
Now, it should be also mentioned that Blue Book was actually closed down months before the moon landing. Just going to put that
out
there.
That's kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, because so, we want to allay the public opinion that there's aliens out there messing with our astronauts.
Well, the one that started, there is a, that started with the Air Force after Blue Book, is they think that's when the Men in Black started.
Yeah, there's a couple instances of that showing up. There was a gentleman who actually was tracking stuff back in the 1950s. That was putting together his own investigative work. And this is just after, what is it, 1952's sighting over Washington, D.C. I think they had a big conversation about
it. Oh, they had the sighting, that was what? I forgot how many, it was like 12?
Oh, there was a bunch of them.
It was outrageous. It was so big that they had a congressional meeting, they had... You know, chiefs of staffs at Pentagon. They had all these people just get together, and it was like, it was scary.
They were freaking out because they had no idea what to deal with this, and they didn't know how to tell the general public. Don't worry about it; everything's cool.
So this whole thing about conspiracy theories and everything else, this is what's been brought up with most of the people that have are in the agencies or are coming out and stuff. Is like they're afraid of mass hysteria, as it is right now. Most people going, show us the aliens. We want to see the aliens. If they're here, we want to know. So
one of the biggest things that I think should be mentioned is like, and actually in one small European country, actually, and we may have touched on this briefly, that, you know what, the general public is not going to freak the F out. That's Belgium back in the late 80s, early 90s. The whole country was coming together on the entire thing, both from police documentation to military individuals in the high command. And then they were saying that, yeah, we're tracking this stuff. We have pictures of these flying triangles, which is where the triangles thing started popping up.
Right. I have it here. The Belgium Wave, which is 1989 to 90, and it's at the end of November 1989, citizens of Belgium reported a large triangle UFO hovering in the sky. I mean, it was large. It wasn't like small. It was large. So large. A few months later, in March 1990, new sightings of multiple objects were reported, confirmed by military ground radar. Two F-16 fighters, jets would see the investigate and anomalies, and through the pilots could not see actually visually, they were able to lock onto their targets with radar, but they were too fast and they took off. So they say some 13,500 people are estimated to have witnessed the incident, is making the most widely UFO sightings. Like it says here, it's a hostile, it's not a hostile or aggressive one. They stopped the investigation because there's nothing going on. I mean,
yeah, there's nothing going on. But the fact is that, you know, there was a number of sightings and it was documented. And you had one of the first European countries actually just coming out and saying, yeah, there's something out there that we can't identify, period.
But we're not going to freak out about it.
We're not going to freak out about it. And I think that's the biggest takeaway from this little situation, because governments typically will, anything that, if you've ever watched anything, we'll use from 1949 because that's as current. Governments that control through by fear usually will have, you know, they'll use fear tactics, they'll use anything to control the populace as best they can. But when you have a country like Belgium after World War II is not intimidated by anything, you're going to have these guys say, hey, look, you know what? The general public can handle it, guys. I don't know where you guys are getting this. I mean, you might have a couple of outliers out there that are tending their fields of corn or something like that. And it's like, you got your pitchfork and your shotgun. You know, you better get out of here, damn alien, messing with my crop.
Yeah. I mean,
but that's few and far between. I think most people, even in the heartland of America, and I'm poking a little fun at you guys, but I'm sorry. You can do it to me all day long. I'm fine with that. But the thing is, most general people, if you give them some legit stuff, they're usually pretty calm most of the time.
Right.
And they can deal with it.
So what they've also noticed is why when they were talking along to other people, like in the United States, when they've actually talked to people who've seen them, and the people come out and says, we're scared to say anything because we're gonna get ridiculed. We're going to say, oh, we're crazy, we're nuts, and everything else.
After 1969, when Blue Book folded up shop, that was part of the deal, is that the Air Force disavowed most of the sightings. And, you know, of course, this was being followed up by David J. Allen Hynek, who was a professor and doctor, who was actually brought on Blue Book to disprove a lot of these sightings. But there is a small handful of those that still could not be identified.
Well, as you talk about this guy, his son, I was watching a thing about his son, and his son said basically he stayed on to try to not disapprove, but to keep the Blue Book people from being so, like, wiping everything
out. Dismissive
of everything. And at the point that he was going to quit, he talked to his son, and he told his son, I can't, because who's going to watch these guys?
Yeah, there's nobody to watch the government at that particular time. You're having what Eisenhower had warned about in a television thing about the military complex getting out there in front of everything and controlling the narrative. And if anybody who's ever a student of history knows, all history books are written to favor one side or another. Usually the winning side usually controls that narrative.
Right.
And nothing was more clear to me when I was doing some studies like that back in high school. It's just like there talk about how, to put it, Vietnam was being portrayed from a military point of view. The U.S. was winning all their engagements, but they were losing the war. So how do you reconcile that in the history books?
Right. I mean, okay. We'll go back even further.
Okay.
So, the Indian Wars.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they were considered to be bad. They were they were given a treaty to give certain land, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, here's all these pioneers coming in and taking over the land that they were just supposed to be given. And they were like, oh, no, we changed our mind. So none of the treaties, there's not one treaty that was, what do you want to say? That was.
There's nothing held. There's no accountability.
Yeah. So that's what we're saying about government. So when now we have these agencies, who's backing them up? We need to see who's backing them up. Where are they getting the money? Who is in charge?
Okay, so I'm going to add something here. This is almost like a. This sounds like one of those secret cell video games or something like that. All these departments are probably so segregated from each other.
They don't know.
They don't know who's at the top. It's like you don't know what the other cell's going to do or who's in charge of it.
When they had the UFO meetings, they had these people up there and they said, do you know this general that was supposed to be part of it? And they go, no. And it says, do you know anything about the research of UFOs? No. Well, what happened is these people came up. They were totally different sections of this. I think it wasn't ATIB. It was something else. And they just said, basically, we don't know. Well, they didn't because they're segregated.
I remember there was a viewer, a U.S. senator, is actually interviewing a couple of these guys from ATIP, I think, or something like that. They said, are you aware of this? No, I have no knowledge of that. It's just like, and we haven't got any federal thing. I'm a senator here asking you a question, guy. You got nothing for me. Okay, no pizza for you. I mean, that's, you know, they're so segregated from each other. So there's not a central head. I mean, this is like the biggest multi-headed hydra you could ever think of, you know. And okay, go ahead, Jason. Go to town. Start chopping them heads off.
Which is interesting because right now in our government, it's split. There is actually people want to get the information out. And there's people in there that is going to try to keep the information in.
But they also have lots of money in those coffers, too, and they don't want to let that stuff go.
Well, the ones that are keeping it in, this is what I believe, the ones keeping it in are actually getting subsidized, I hate to say this, but it's probably true, from the industries that are working on it. So we're talking Raytheon, Boeing, you know, Skunk Works, all those who actually have, according to some people.
Hey, Boeing, how's that working for bringing those astronauts back, yeah? they're loving it up there. I'm sure they're getting tired of looking at each other's crazy hair because of that zero gravity stuff. Come on, man. Yeah, Boeing, you need to do better. You need to do better. Sorry. I saw something about that earlier today.
Yeah, they're like, still up there.
They're still up there, and they're thinking that they're probably going to have to send up a see if a Falcon rocket can go up there here in about the next couple weeks or something.
Well, why
like
not?
That.
Why not? What's his name?
What?
Elon Musk.
Well, that's the Falcon 9.
The Falcon 9, yeah.
It'd be able to send somebody up there. I mean, but you don't see Jeff Bezos manning up and sending up his Blue Origin penis rocket going up there. At least that's what some people have said that rocket looks like, which is kind of funny. Or Virgin Galactic going up there, their weird little space plane.
Well, his only goes right up to the edge and then goes down. Doesn't go into space.
That's not a space plane. It's not a rocket.
It's not a rocket.
It's not a rocket. It's a suborbital plane. All right, great. You know, I used to watch some TV shows that dealt with that kind of weird stuff. Anyway, I'm getting way off topic here.
So what happened is, like, all these agencies, they actually have, supposedly have alien technology that they're trying to do. And some of the government agencies want it back, and they're saying no.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've read about, too. It's like, when some of the U.S. senators, like Tim Burchett, has asked for that stuff back, the private industry that these things have been farmed out to is like, hell no, we're not going to give it back to you guys. And it's just like, come on. You know, we got to be answerable to somebody. Otherwise, whatever, you know, if they'd have to start cutting black budget projects like crazy, and that would cover a bunch of people all at the same time. So even though they're all segregated from each other, there's going to be a big blanket that's going to be pulled back. And it's like, oh, You've been exposed. You've been exposed. You've been exposed. Hmm.
Well, what gets me is, like, if they come out and say that they have this stuff, they're still going to work on it.
Yeah, why not just tell people that you have it, and then, you know, some private industry has been working on trying for the last 25 to 30 years,
and we would, you know, as citizens, we'd be going, cool, okay,
good,
you know.
I mean, that was been the biggest thing we've been asking for, is like some, just say, yeah, we've been in charge of holding on to some weird alien stuff, you know.
Well, what I understand, they're having a real hard time doing the reverse engineering, that because of what they have, and we don't have any of that material, and they're trying to figure out how to make that material. They're having a real hard time reverse engineering.
I'm just going to say that these guys who are doing their research and doing their reverse engineering, their brains aren't big enough to handle it. Sorry. You need to evolve.
Small brain people?
Small brain people. I mean, we're still fighting with each other over land territories and religion and stuff. Yeah, that's unfortunate. I think maybe until we got past that and became actually a type one civilization, we might be able to understand the idea of how to transmute matter from one place to the other by using a dimensional shift versus warping space,
right,
or something like that.
So all these agencies, there's ATIP, and then there's the Bigelow, which is Bass
was the biggest one. Robert Bigelow, I think, had an interview on 60 Minutes with a
lady. He also had one with Joe Rogan, which is 2 hours.
Oh, he was on Rogan?
Yes.
Okay, I don't follow Rogan all that often. There's only little snippets I see every once in a while. But Bigelow was on 60 Minutes and said, yeah, I believe there's aliens there. And it's like, and some other people said, you know, if, and actually Lou Elizondo said, it's like, if he says there is, and he's a multimillionaire, and he's got all this money locked in to doing projects for the government, and he's got these contracts, the guy probably knows something.
Yeah, he does.
You think?
Harry Reid,
yep,
was really into make sure that UFOs and stuff. I think Harry Reid actually had an incident, if I remember right.
I don't know if he had an incident, but I do know that he and Bigelow, at that time, Bigelow had actually got a hold of the Skinwalker Ranch,
right,
area from a couple of people who had actually owned the ranch and actually had started doing some investigative work. And Bigelow at that time had hit up Reed, said, hey, I need some help with getting some actual documentation, right, scientific documentation.
Well, then that's when General Alexander was helping him during that time, and they went the first night there. And I guess there was so much going on that was just unbelievable. There was orbs around there, and this is basically all night. They were just up all night watching everything going on.
A bunch of cryptids kept showing up. Now, if anybody's been watching that the Skinwalker Ranch thing on History Channel with Dr. Travis...
Scott?
I think so. That's his name. Did some fantastic stuff. We the first time I'd ever seen him was when we were talking about Tesla.
Yeah.
And then that rabbit hole starts to unwind so quickly. which pathway do we go down?
Well, like right now, I could. There's so much that he did.
But Travis Scott is focusing strictly on the data points that they keep talking about and seeing if stuff is reoccurring, so they can see some sort of a pathway or some sort of reoccurring system showing up while they're recording all this data. But there hasn't been any mention of the cryptids, but the Skinwalker Ranch has also got a lot of those crazy, weird, ethereal, spectral, ghost-like stuff. You know, almost poltergeist type thing going on.
And a lot of anything with their electrical stuff they've done has actually gone blank. I mean, just
the battery, off. The batteries, everything, a lot of batteries is a constant problem that they've always had with electrical power. Batteries get drained almost immediately.
And they've had cows die automatically.
Oh, yeah. I saw one of these cows go absolutely bonkers because...
I watched it, yeah.
And the cow had been exposed to some high microwave radiation, made it go blind.
Right. And the other cows just went chased off and left
cow. They left it. It's like this cow was just running around in a freaking circle.
Yeah.
And the guys were watching us, like, and they were concerned about even going in to investigate the cow because they don't know if they're going to get whacked.
Yeah. So the cow was definitely moving.
Terrible, Paul. Terrible.
Utterly terrible.
Moving.
It was just utterly terrible.
Yeah. Interjection. It was an interjection. We need some humor in this thing. It gets too dark.
So we'll skip the Skinwalker Ranch.
Yeah, that's a totally
that could
different.
Be by a whole episode.
Again, that's another part of the rabbit hole.
So, so what happened is Bigelow started his own aerospace type of thing, and he's huge. I mean, they showed the buildings that it basically has so much acreage before the fence, and it has another fence, and it has things between the highway separators by the fence. So if somebody tries to drive through, they can't drive through, which is really, this is really high security, and you don't see anybody.
No, not even close. I mean, everything that's near that mesa and what they found in it, or what they believe they have found in it, is crazy to begin with. But let's get back to the points of what we were talking about.
Okay, so we were talking about also the sighting. So the number one sighting was Kenneth Arnold in 1947. Remember this, 1947.
Yep.
On June 24th, 1947, by Mount Rainier, he saw a V formation of 9 blue glowing objects flying fast at an estimated
velocity of like 1,700
miles per hour. Thought it was some new military aircraft because he was just 2 years after World War II. This mm-hmm. Thought it was a Cold War type of thing happening and stuff. So described the craft's motion as similar to a saucer if you skip it across water.
And the news reports, from what I understand, actually latched onto that idea of
flying saucer.
But if you ever saw the actual depiction or drawing of what Arnold said he saw, it looks more like a boomerang.
Right. Oh, a V shape.
Bingo. And there's actually a number of flying craft that are witnessed during the late 40s and early 50s of that same kind of winged formation. And there's a couple of them in particular, but keep in mind too,
they're just big ducks. We're the big geese from Canada. In the V formation with lights.
because we all know geese need lights to run by.
No.
But yeah, keep in mind too that Arnold's sighting in 47 just precedes the July crash at Roswell.
Right, which is the next one is 1947. It is in 1947. It doesn't say the date on this, but I think didn't we say June?
It's either June or July,
right,
is what it says.
And it's very interesting because there's so much about this. I mean, Roswell is the number one site that everybody talks about. It's also about, they said it was a weather balloon. Weather balloons don't crash at 1200 miles per hour is what they figured. Also don't have people in it.
Generally speaking, there wouldn't be anything left of the person.
No, because, well, the thing is, when it crashed, people are thinking that there's nothing left when it crashed. No, there was saucers that they took.
Okay, so let's be clear, because remember we said that there's actually two crashes
right
nearby each other. So the first one that takes place on Max Basil's ranch,
yes,
just outside of Roswell. He hears the sound, he hears the crash, he goes out and he sees a large debris field. Okay, so that's not a complete saucer. There would be bits and pieces, but you're saying that there's actually an actual saucer?
Yes,
out there?
There was part of a saucer still up.
Now, is that from the second crash?
No, they actually found bodies at the first one.
Okay.
And then the second one, which was 75 miles away, they found bodies there too.
Okay. Man, somebody needs to learn how to turn on their internal dampers.
Now we can talk about what we talked about before. According to Lou.
Oh, Mr. Elizondo again.
One of his comments, he said, was mentioned that they could have been taken down by
EMP. Now, EMP. Yeah, now, for those out there, an EMP is an electromagnetic pulse. A great example is like if you ever saw the movie Ocean's 11, they have what is called a pinch. It simulates an electromagnetic pulse, but without the massive disruption with a bomb attached to it and massive amount of radiation. But it will knock stuff out that is live electrical stuff and just kill it dead.
Yeah, there's no electrical anything. In fact, that's what they're saying. When they did the nuclear test, it produces an EMP that will knock things out. So there is development for bombs that have EMP pulses.
Correct. So that leads a question that nobody's bothered to ask. So they had mentioned that they thought that these saucers initially were hit because of a mass electrical storm that was going on. Well, electrical storms, they also cause their own amount of electromagnetic force. However, was there anything being tested? I've never heard anybody look into that part of it. Because if these saucers had been brought down by an EMP, or was the reason why that storm existed in the first place?
Could be. Yeah. And then I also heard very small snippet that there was a third one, and it actually didn't crash land. It was kind of forced land. And then the aliens inside were alive and everything. And they actually took the UFO and took everything out. So
there's a third one?
There was a third one.
Where was this taking place?
In that area.
So Roswell is a hotbed of UFOs.
Jeez, what's next? What's close to it?
Green cheese.
Green cheese.
I need some crackers to go with my saucer.
Oh.
I'm a bad person.
Crackers with your saucer?
Yeah, crack saucer.
Or do you milk in that saucer?
All right.
So, go on. Well, you know, Area 51 is close there.
Correct.
And then also, there is the other Air Force. There's an Air Force base next to it.
Okay, so you have the Skunk Works set up at Area 51. Then you've got S4, which is another proving ground that's just outside of that.
Right.
And those are both.
And there's the Air Force base, which is
Edwards.
Edwards. There's a couple other ones. There's small bases there. In fact, in the service in New Mexico, there's a Army base there. I had a chance to become an aerial photographer surveillance person.
Boy, that'd be cool.
Yeah, if you know what they have to do. I mean, back then, I think they still had the planes you had to go up into and like, no. unless I was sitting there looking at the pictures going, okay, yeah, that's that. That'd be fine. But, so the next one is Lubbock Lights, 1951.
Oh, yeah, okay. I think this place takes place in Texas, if I remember correctly.
Right, in Lubbock, Texas, yes. Texas Test freshman Carl Hart Jr. even snapped photos of the so-called lights, which were published in newspapers across the country and Life magazine.
Yep.
Wow. Project Blue Book investigated events and conclusion that the lights were birds reflecting the luminous from
this Lubbock. Running lights.
Wow, look, those birds shine.
Wow, those are reflective feathers. I need to make a suit of those. No, come on. And what kind of formation were they flying in?
Doesn't say. Most people say the lights were, however, refused to accept this because they were flying too fast.
Too fast.
It was those geese from Mount Rainier. Going 1700 miles an hour. Okay, the next one is Cleveland, 1957. That's a great year.
Oh yeah.
Some of this is based off of the sighting was in Close Encounters.
Oh, okay.
Okay. This is where the famous scene where the UFO makes electronics go haywire and everything came from. 1957, dozens of citizens Leland, Texas, seeing a rocket or strange lights that interfered with their vehicles, engine dies, lights cut off. Jeez, I wonder what would do that.
Any large electromagnetic vehicle, perhaps, or something like that?
And the police actually saw these and thought that they were a hoax, but saw the mysterious lights and investigated the situation. So, no, I don't believe you. Oh, look! Oh, my God.
Well, good reference. I mean, and you were right about Close Encounters. Take a look at that time where Richard Dreyfuss and his pickup is stopped right at that rail yard spot. And the radio starts going wacko. Yeah. All that stuff starts floating around, and he gets one side of his face burnt.
Yeah. So they said it was an electrical storm, ball lightning that caused the lights. And guess what? There was no storm in the area.
Now, I've seen very rare footage of ball lightning. Yeah. It's a wild, wild, crazy effect. But no, it's not like a UFO where they have that. I mean, it shows one coming across a bunch of train tracks, and it's got little electrical pulses shooting off of it and zapping metal and everything like that, just randomly.
Which just reminds me of, Doc, it's almost time.
Oh my God.
Don't worry about it.
I've got it all covered, Marty. Good old Doc Brown.
Okay, Turin, 1976.
Oh, I remember a lot of stuff taking place in 1976.
Oh, right? That was a big time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. September 19th, concerned citizens started pouring bright lights in the sky. A F-4 fighter, which is basically was ours, that they bought from us, near the object, the instruments blacked out, forcing the pilot to return to base. A second one was placed, F-4 was out, and said it was unusual light. It achieved radar lock, but according to the pilot, the UFO released a glowing object, with the pilot assuming to be some sort of missile straight of him. As he prepared to fight back, the pilot experienced malfunctions with its instruments. Again, he witnessed another bright object released from the UFO and head straight towards the ground. He safely returned to base despite the faulty equipment. After that, they contacted the U.S. states to aid them in it, and Chief Lieutenant Colonel Olin Mooley detailed the events of the night. These are the explanations. First, the bright lights seen by the civilians might have been Jupiter, really, which was visible in the sky that night. Second, an author, Brian Dunning, notes in his podcast, Skiptoid, the second F-4 jet had a long history of electrical problems, meaning the instruments might have failed regardless of possible UFO interference. It also could explain the radar lock being a malfunction. So basically,
and let's keep in mind too, at this particular time in history, there was the big pullout of the United States out of Tehran, deposed Shah of Iran, and a lot of people were trying to get out of that whole area. I had relatives that were living in Tehran at the time that this was all going on. So it wouldn't be surprising that this would have been lost in the paper shuffle as you're trying to get your government to pull a bunch of American citizens out of there. It's just like, a report of a UFO, and then gets kind of shoved down deep into the garbage bin and never to be talked about. Surprise. And just because it's taking place over in Europe or someplace that might be a little less developed in the United States or first world country doesn't mean it didn't happen. I'm sure that there were a lot of people. I mean, you know what I mean?
In Russia, they see a lot of UFOs in Russia. In fact, they're...
Right now, they're seeing them.
Right. But one of the things they were talking about is that Russians are told to be very aggressive towards them.
Oh, yeah. That's
they're supposed to shoot them down.
So back during the time of Stalin, when the Soviet Union was at its peak and everything, Stalin was all about getting us. They had heard through the grapevine that the United States had been able to retrieve alien craft through the KGB at the time. Now the FSB is what they call them. But at the time, KGB...
We make you talk.
Yeah. And that you know, Kurskan Yar, I believe that one we were talking about last week, is the place where they would take all that stuff too. And this was set up. It's like military says, you're going to go out and do your own, you're going to do your version of a kamikaze mission. Here, drink up, comrade. Go. Attack these things. Bring them down. And they actually did bring some of them down. And the UFOs actually fought back. And so there's been a setup where the Soviets at that time were very aggressive and wanting whatever they could get and bringing that stuff. And they managed to get some, but at a cost of life. In fact, a lot of the rocket pads that they had for their missiles and stuff blew up just as they were getting ready to ignite and set them off. And it's like huge explosions.
Right, right.
So it's not uncommon to see around certain setups for missiles, especially if anything's set up with a nuclear device attached to it, like an ICBM, that a UFO will investigate and see what's going on. I mean, take a look at the UFOs that have flown over the military bases here in the United States.
Well, they've had that big incident where they actually turned them on and off.
Yeah.
And then totally blank.
Yeah.
No electricity at all.
And there's the old videos. There's actually stuff that has been mentioned. Elizondo said you might be able to doctor that kind of stuff up today, but in all honesty, you've got this little blinking light that's on the outside of an ICBM that they're testing with an actual active nuclear device on it that splits off, goes into the machine, then pops back out, does some more rings and flashes, and then it disappears. Now, I don't know if that thing was successful in its launch or got brought down, but there's a good possibility it came down.
What I understand is China had some stuff going up and it crashed. It actually blew up. And so did North Korea again. Mm-hmm. They did too. We don't know. There's not a lot of information from China about anything they see. All these other countries that we're not friends with, we don't get any information. And what I'm telling you right now is, you know, the seven that I just talked about is nothing.
Okay, no kidding. I mean, you know what? So they've been saying that there's a lot of activity with UFOs going into mountains and so on like that. South Korea had a mountain that they were doing underground testing and it imploded. The mountain collapsed in on it. And I'm thinking maybe Marvin the Martian said, no, I'm not going to let this happen anymore.
That mountain was in my way.
That mountain was in my way. So I could totally see that happening. But, you know, when after watching the stuff that I've seen from, again, going back to the Skinwalker Ranch thing on the History Channel, which has been really cool to watch, because these guys are coming out from a very heavy
scientific
orientation. Yes, okay, it's a show. They have to kind of pump it up a little bit to keep the ratings going. That's going to be typical. But strictly that science is what's holding a lot of people there. They want to know what's going on.
Right, right. Well, there's so many. That, in fact, they went to there was an abandoned building there. This is something real quick. They had an abandoned building there, and Travis Scott opened this, like where the well is supposed to be, right, or something. They opened it, and he basically got a small dose of radiation poison because the rads were so high coming out of this, and they couldn't figure out why is there radiation coming out of that. And that's where they had a lot of that house is where they had a lot of sightings and stuff. Could have been from that. I don't know. But they closed it up, and that area where that house is actually contained now. It's because of the radiation.
You'd have to.
Yeah.
You know, and why are you having these 1.6 gigahertz signals constantly going off?
1.6, yes.
1.6.
Just remember that. Now, I'm going to bring something up that Alan hasn't heard.
Okay.
There is a person who was into radios, and he kind of wanted to get to the point where he thought, I can talk to aliens, whatever, right? Got to the point where he could send out certain signals, and he was listening, and he could listen to what the signals were coming in. Because there is, I don't know if you people know this, but there's signals coming in. There's been recorded signals coming in from space. Government has them, private industries, you know, all these big telescope, if listening or what you want to call them.
The radio telescopes.
Radio telescopes, but there's other ones that actually have list for listening. they're pointing out to space. They're going out to space for a reason, so they can hear something. But I understand is 1966 or 1976, there was a big download of information or sound that came through there, and it was like the first time they thought that it was alien contact. So what this guy did, he got some of the information, he listened to it, he has a big radio broadcaster, sent it out into space, and guess what he got back? He had that copied and sent it back. He started getting stuff back. And this is not confirmed or anything. This is on one of the shows that they had. And he said basically that, you know how you decipher certain words for certain things, and but it has to be for that, what they're talking about. So he got it, and basically it said that they were from a planet that was dying, that there's no water, that they're here to, I think government's afraid of people doing this and saying they're here to take over. So, yeah.
Anybody watch the TV show called V? Yeah. Remember the lizard people?
Yes.
They not only want to mate with us, but they also want to eat us. They want to take all of our gerbils and guinea pigs. Punks. And cute little animals. And we're going to eat them. And they want to take all the and desalinate the water so they have fresh water.
Yes.
Great. Just great.
So that's what this guy was saying. But I take it with a grain of salt. So.
I just don't want those lizard people shooting me in the face with a bunch of blood from their eyes. Yeah. Ew, gross.
So this is what... I kind of come up with this.
Sorry.
Great horny toads. Psst, ah!
Anyway, never mind.
Don't mess with the lizard people. They're just bad.
Remember, they're out in the desert. Go out. Don't get in the caves.
Don't go to the caves.
Okay. So
do you want to get into the abduction of the people who have actually had the abductions?
Yeah, I want to get into. There's so many. Oh, this is okay. First of all, I gotta say this. You can go on the internet and there's all these different UFO things, right? But there's nothing that correlates it all together.
Funny that. It's kind of like the departmentalization of the way the government runs when you have all these different agencies.
Really? Because if you look up all the different abductions, you won't get them all.
Oh, and hell no.
You'll get something from MUFON or UFO Hub or whatever, and then you'll get maybe the government stuff. But it's all not all together, which I find is very interesting, and it needs to be. There needs to be an agency, not necessarily from the government. I'm surprised MUFON hasn't done it. Maybe they have. They just don't put it out.
Probably because if they're viewing people, they're trying to probably not be evasive, but they want to try to, you know, protect the people's anonymity.
Well, they could still do that, but just say this is how many people.
Well, okay, so
but people, I know people wouldn't believe it, but
you put it out by like years. It's like, okay, so how many people said that they were abducted in like 1996?
Right.
You know, and where?
Where? And have a map.
You know? And I'm sure there is by years. It's
then have it by UFO sightings with that map.
Oh, it's like you have an overlay, so you have all this data that comes all together at the same time. It'd be no different than like when we were doing the investigative work. We were looking at the. I know. Remember, what did I say about small brains? I'm sorry. I'm just a caveman.
I can't think anymore.
You need your brain case fixed, bud. No, but I think.
Let me take that probe out my nose.
Ooh, ouch. God, that'd be painful, man. That's, like
that's a, no probe. That's my finger.
Maybe you should take your finger out of your nose. It's kind of like the way we were doing the Sasquatch stuff.
Yeah.
So remember that map that we were looking at all the sightings all up and down the West Coast? And not just that, but the way it spread out. So there's a couple areas in the Tornado Alley that have no squatch at all.
Right.
And then you get into the southern states and where you have,
Harry Friend, I think, is one of those names or something like that.
The
or
Wookie?
Or Harry Buddy and the Skunk Ape and a bunch of other, like the Boggy Creek creature and all that stuff down in the Everglades is a huge population. You can see all these different sightings. Now, I'm sure if you were to tag each one of these with a date, it would be really interesting to see how those dates all correlate with certain things that were going on. Like your suggestion, it's like, if you had all these abductions, how do they correlate with actual UFO visitations? And then maybe some other was it investigated by military personnel of any kind? Or was there any military people even there?
Right.
It'd be like, officials like the police. Like, okay, so for example,
is there a police report?
Okay, so it's like, let's take it for example. You have these kids who call on 911 down in Las Vegas saying that there's a bunch of aliens in the backyard. Like 9 foot tall freaking aliens.
Right.
Right. But the guys, the cops that have been sent out to investigate this whole thing, because it's a 911 call, and the kids obviously sound scared. And if you ever listen to that recording, you tell the kids definitely jostled, right? But caught on the camera of the cops that have those vest cameras, you can literally see something swirling down, coming down. And this is just, I think, just before that call was placed. So you've got something coming down from the sky that correlates with an official person, a policeman, going out to investigate something that is sounding absolutely crazy. Now, the problem I have is that they said that there's a property line that they couldn't take videotape across, which I think is a bunch of BS, personally. It's like, if you're going to see an alien back there, you're going to see it. So the cops go back there, then they're jostled coming back out of that whole thing, but they're trying to put on a good false face or whatever. That's what it kind of sounds like. Well, if you ever have any more calls like that, don't call us. That's what the cops said.
Oh, my God.
And now the family's no longer to be found. Everything that was talked about, they've closed up. They're nowhere around. What happened to them? Did they relocate? Did the men in black just show up? Which I had heard some stories that some guys and some Broncos had showed up.
Wow.
Where's the family?
Interesting. Well, and then this, what's the one about the school kids? But where they were playing in the schoolyard? It's not in the United States, I think.
Well, you're talking about South Africa, where they had the UFO come down and was...
That actually was there, and the kids were out there, and the aliens started coming towards them.
Yeah, and they were downloading information into them via, like, telepathy or some stuff like that. The kids had slightly varying degrees, but there was, like, 30 kids that were all affected that this thing came down while they were at recess. They were playing around outside, and there's been videotape where you had a UFO abductee investigator by the name of Dr. David Mack. Or John Mack, excuse me. David Mack's a writer. Sorry. John Mack had gone out to talk to these kids and see if he could get some clear indication. But we always run into this problem when somebody is going to do out an investigation, whether it be for Squatch, if it were a UFO, or cattle mutilation, you want to see something so badly that whatever you see will be fit into your own personal narrative.
Right.
That's the one thing you always have to, and it's hard to get unbiased coverage, but that's the reason why you have large groups of people going out investigating all at the same time, not just one investigator. That's the way that you work out on the buddy system, and you have somebody to double check you.
Well, that's what they're talking about when they did Project Blue Book. It was kind of a joke because they sent two guys out, and they said that those two guys would catch another plane and come back, and then the real people, maybe like a 12-man team, would go out and investigate. Which is, I didn't know that. And so we were talking about...
So you're having a false face going out there to put on official airs, and then somebody actually comes up behind you as a cleanup crew to come in and do a thorough investigation.
Right.
I could see that. I could honestly see that from almost everything that came out of Blue Book, for sure. Because having just two guys... What is this, like Simon and Simon going out there and stuff like that?
Simon,
and it's like just going out there and saying, hey, AJ, I need you to go check this stuff out, man. No, Rick, that's not it.
Or the two guys from Psych. Wait a minute. I feel that they're here.
No, you're just observing stuff. You're just really good at it, dude.
Now, speaking of psych, this is what they were saying, too, about the abductions, is that they are psychologically and mentally, they can be talked to. They talk to humans. And that the people that are abducted know, can see what's going on, and that everybody else around them is, like, slow or they're not, like, moving.
Now, I've heard of some military guys that are called interfacers. No, this is an actual term. That these guys were used to interface with an alien intelligence or something and get these impressions so they could relay that into English to their immediate or higher ups. And then these guys would be called
those are
in.
It's not the same
if you're thinking of like the remote viewers, because I think there's a difference in the way that works.
I got to tell you, you know who is in charge of the remote viewers?
Who's in charge?
The guy that did the for the goats.
Oh shit!
Honestly, true, true.
Don't stare at the goats too long. I saw something I was going to share with one of my friends about that earlier today. I was looking at a goat, and it's like, nope.
Don't stare at it too long; might die.
Yeah. Why don't the aliens go after the goats? I mean, they go after horses and cows. They don't go after goats, as far as I can tell. Unless you're a chupacabra.
We haven't even gone over the mutilations.
Oh, trust me. I've got some stuff about that.
So, yeah. I mean, we're almost at that point. So, one of the things I found is the probes.
Oh, yeah.
And all these people have been abducted. They're finding probes. Now, you had a story about...
Yeah, so years ago, I had a friend of mine who was an actual, quote, UFO investigator, unquote, and he had set up a couple of things taking place at LCC, Lane Community College, down in Eugene. And he had these people who have been abductees come in and actually give their talks to a large group of people. And one of these people, who was associated with MUFON, had come in, and he was a former company man. I'm not going to mention names on it right at the moment. But this guy had come in and had shown some film of him working on removing one of these probes that had been attached to somebody. He was a licensed hypnotherapist, and he put this guy under a deep hypnosis. He had also had a local anesthetic and a deep anesthetic added so they could actually pull this probe out. They actually showed an x-ray of this guy. It was like someplace in his, I believe in his leg. Where is this? But the probe itself was attached to a nerve ending. And as soon as the doctor who was doing the surgery hit that with his metal probe, that person almost came right out of the sleep, because it was on a nerve ending or something like that. And the person who was talking about this, the guy who was investigating this, had also mentioned, it's like a lot of the stuff that you're finding on these probes when they're being pulled out are surrounded with a blemish of human skin tissue, epidermal. So people who have the scoops that are taken out of their skin, actually these probes have been encapsulated with skin tissue that isn't rejected by the human body of the host that has the probe in it. All these probes are vastly different from what... I mean, everybody thinks it's like some weird little pill-sized looking
thing.
No,
they're all different.
Completely different. This gentleman had a jeweler's case, and at first I thought, jeweler's case? But they're bubbled in such a way that these probes are independent of each other. Some of them, as I mentioned to Paul, I mean, at first glance, it doesn't look like much. Some of it looked like there's little bits of ground pepper almost, like, but much bigger. There are other ones that
nanobites.
Yeah, I'm probably sure that they were, if they were, you know, after the biopsies were done on these things and had to cut through that thick skin layer to get to the probe itself, which is actually something they had a hard time cutting through that stuff. And then you also have one that I was mentioning to Paul. One looked like a booger. I mean, in all honesty, that's what it looked like to me, but according to this guy, this was an actual probe. And it's like, well, if it's covered and surrounded by human skin, yeah, it's probably going to take on that kind of a look. The other one I saw was the most bizarre looking one. It looked like a shredded metal, almost like a, if you take heavy steel wool and you pull it apart, there's the thin tendrils of metal. That's what this one looked like. And I'm thinking it encapsulated like a blood vessel or something like that. It was crazy looking. The crazy thing about it too was, is that when we went to go for a dinner after said talk, we were at a place and suddenly all the lights went out. I mean, there was a blackout.
Oh, really?
Yeah, dude. It was like, they're here. And we were trying to joke around it with it and stuff like that. But it was very, very interesting.
Now, most of the people that have these probes have some kind of psychological problem sometimes.
Actually, quite a few of them. If you take a look at some of the cases that either John Mack or Bud Hopkins, I don't know if that came up in any of your research or not.
No.
Did a lot of hypno-regression on a bunch of these people to kind of walk them through and what they were witnessing. And they all have had some sort of massively traumatic experience take place. They can't immediately say why. It's like when I was looking at the Betty Hill and Barney Hill case from the early 1960s. I think it's 61, I believe. And they were heading back and they lost like 3 hours on the trip. And there was something not right about what had happened. But Betty Hill had the presence of mind to realize something had happened. And they checked out the back of their car. There's a bunch of really high spots of electromagnetic and radiation in some cases, with the compass going crazy around the back end of the car, because they had heard some sounds that seemed to correspond with these spots on the back of their car. Both of themselves being probed themselves for some, I don't know if I want to say evasive, but I think that's the
most term. Of the time they said, even the two guys that we talked about said that basically they were, how should I say this, that they're trying to check out just everything. I mean, there's been reports of them having, you know, people have had surgery on those things, and they opened up and closed up real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're talking about the Pascagoula abduction that took place in 1973.
Yeah. Those guys said that one guy had a female alien checking him out.
Was she tall? Was she blonde? I think they're blonde. I think
they said they were white. They were very white. They're whitish and thin.
There's a bunch of we have yet to even get into the different types
of aliens. Yes. And stuff. So he just said that she was really rough with him. Well, he was probably awake. If he can remember, he's probably awake and freaking out. Yeah. So he's probably So.
So that one was a really interesting one, because the cops at the time when these guys came in, they were all freaking out, and they kept them in the box together and they're talking, but they let the recording on. And the way they were talking to each other is just like, there's something happened to these guys. They were literally.
Then there's the movie Fire in the Sky.
Travis Walton abduction, probably one of the best well-known ones, as well as the way he recalls what was taking place.
Yeah.
And not only that, but it was also witnessed by several other people, him being abducted.
And they didn't believe him. They didn't believe it. One single one of them. They thought that at one time, did they think they killed him or something like that, or.
Oh, yeah, they talked about that one for sure. I'm just trying to see if I can find the time that actually took
place. So there's been so many that it's just unbelievable. And one of the scientists that I was listening to that actually has been abducted when he was 6 and said basically that with this probe and everything, that they had a mental contact at any time with these aliens, and they could, like, pull, okay, like, when he gets older, if they still have the probe in him, they'd actually go over to the car, turn the car off to the side, right? And basically, things would go black, or not, you know, like for him, would go black. And he said that it affects the people that you're around, because his parents were, at one point, both his parents were like catatonic, and they couldn't wake him. And so he figured out that people that have these implants, it expands out. And when they want to get hold of you, it blacks the people out around you.
So think of like if you're a fan of like Resident Alien of all things, there's a couple times where Harry, the alien, is the only one that's aware of what's going on, but the people that are in the car that has just shut off are completely catatonic.
Right.
And
that's what it's based off of.
You know, and that abduction scenario where Vanderspiegel, I love that name, gets out and confronts the alien, voiced by George Takei, Sulu, which is even better. They're having a conversation. And it's just like, you can't be talking to these guys. You can't be hanging out with them. We've got plans for this planet. It's like, oh my God, what the hell is going on? I mean, because they're taking actual UFO stuff and actually incorporating it into the series, which right. has been really cool. But that's the way that you would see it. It's like, everybody's just like, they're just lost, literally lost in space. And you don't have no correlation or reason why you're missing time.
Right.
Now, okay, so...
Oh, look at this. There's an hour missing.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm not talking that long. No, it's blank.
Oh, no.
What happened?
Oh, Jesus. Is my underwear turned inside out?
Oh, okay.
Have you heard about that?
No.
The clothing? Okay, so some kids...
Some of the clothing's not right.
Yeah, clothing is placed back on the abductees backwards. And in some cases, they can't find any of it. I mean, they... Okay, so... Travis Walton. Okay, here he is. He's abducted. He's in full gear in his logging gear and stuff like that.
Yes.
In Snowflake, Arizona, right? He's abducted. They find him 25 miles away from where he was abducted from, completely buck-ass naked.
Right.
No clothes whatsoever. What happened? Did they forget to take the clothes out of the wash or something?
Well, they thought he was on drugs and stuff.
Yeah, but no.
So the other two guys I talked about, the Tuscaloosa or... Yeah,
Pascaloosa.
One of the guys was found on the beach.
I didn't know about that one.
Yeah, he was found on the beach. I'm like, okay, so that's
okay, it's if interesting. Okay, so here's my question. If they found him, didn't this come to the light when the two guys walked into the police station?
Yes, it did.
How did they find him?
I don't know. It's kind of weird.
Loss of time. Next on 60 Minutes.
So, we're going to talk about some more, but what's the next subject we're going to talk about?
Oh, geez. We can either talk about Men in Black.
Oh, we're going to talk about Men in Black, and we're going to talk about... some more of the ATIB and the recorded sightings.
Oh, yeah. The recorded... I think the best one is to go over the military stuff.
Because
yes. I think that would be a really indicative one because there's stuff to back it up. It's not just a photo that you're seeing from people, but actual stuff that you can research on your own. We'll just make mention of it. We'll leave it there.
So... This is the end of part two, and part three will be coming up. Paul.
And this is Alan.
And have a good one.
Woo!
Ukulele music brought to you by Lahaina Music. Lahaina, Maui. Corvus Corax is brought to you by Random Rab, Solace by Aren, and Unexplained Mystery Music is by Sound Roll, which can be found on Upbeat.